it's a peaceful protest, but definitely want to, being a celebrity, being an NBA player, don't exclude me from no conversation at all. First and foremost, I'm a black man, and I'm a member of this community, raising awareness. Some of the injustice that we've been seeing is not okay.
Good morning from Bristol, Connecticut. I'm Mike Greenberg, and we thank you for getting up with us today. It is a morning in which there is a great deal of sports news for us to bring you, including a big step towards possibly baseball returning and more news from the NBA. We'll get to all of that, but there is only one place to begin after a weekend unlike any we've seen in this country in a very long time. You just heard from Jaylen Brown. He drove 15 hours to his home state of Georgia to protest George Floyd's death. Pacers guard Malcolm Brogdon also participated in that protest. 76ers forward Tobias Harris joined a protest in downtown Philadelphia, while Mark Cuban and some Mavericks players attended a rally in Dallas. And an emotional Udonis Haslam addressed a crowd in Miami.
There has to be justice. There has to be protest. We have to be heard. We have to move forward strategically. We have to move forward smart. We have to move forward tedious, and we have to be together, man. How we doing it? As a black man, raising black kids in America, I'm scared as hell. Way more scared than I ever was for myself. Way more scared than I ever was for myself. Not only black men and black lives, it's the other side of who protects those black men and black lives.
LeBron James and several of his Lakers teammates, including Anthony Davis, all posted the same message on Instagram last night, and you see it very simply there. If you ain't with us, we ain't with y'all. Meanwhile, back in LeBron's home state of Ohio, a forward for Ohio State's basketball team, Seth Towns, was detained by police during a protest in Columbus on Friday night. Towns is a grad transfer from Harvard. He told SportsCenter on Saturday that he joined the protest to make sure his voice was heard.
I don't regret anything. Again, we have to be heard, and this is a very serious issue, and I won't shut up. I won't stop. I will continue to use my voice to speak out for the people who are unheard, and that's what I did. Voice is so important. And when I say voice, I'm not talking about speaking per se. I'm talking about actions. I'm talking about going out and protesting and doing your duty as a member of this democracy.
Michael Jordan among those who have weighed in a statement yesterday that read in part, "I am deeply saddened, truly pained, and plain angry. I see and feel everyone's pain, outrage, and frustration. I stand with those who are calling out the ingrained racism and violence toward people of color in our country. We've had enough. We need to continue peaceful expressions against injustice and demand accountability. Our unified voice needs to put pressure on our leaders to change our laws, or else we need to use our vote to create systemic change. Every one of us needs to be part of the solution, and we must work together to ensure justice for all." We're joined this morning by so many of our friends here today, and we have Shania Gumuke and Dominique Foxworth with us to start. Good morning, guys. And Nick, I'll start with you. We saw so many athletes being front and center during the protests over this weekend. What was your reaction?
I mean, honestly, just a lot of pride. And it makes me think about Howard Bryant's book, The Heritage, that talks about the long history of black athletes standing up against injustice. Goes all the way back to Paul Robeson and all the way to Kaepernick and to these guys now. So it just makes me so happy and so proud. And I do think that we should also commend the white players who have spoken up some, and the teams and the commissioners who have put out statements. But to be honest with you, I'm of two minds. Like, I'm happy to see them step up. But honestly, it makes me a little angry because we need more. We need more from them. They need to put something on it because it doesn't seem like they feel the same level of risk as we do. And I mean, it's obvious they don't, but they have the leverage. They have the power and the system that perpetuates this. It was built deliberately, and it is perpetuated deliberately by acts of many people and the inaction of many people. So while I do appreciate the statements, and I do appreciate that maybe some of them are just now realizing that this exists, we don't have time to wait. They need to put something on it. They need to risk stuff too, because they are the ones who benefit from it the most. So I hope all the athletes who are putting up tweets, the white ones specifically, the teams and the commissioners who are putting out statements, I understand that it may take you some time to read what you have to read to get fully educated on this. But while we wait for you to catch up and to take some risk to adjust the system, we are dying. So we need more from them. And a statement, a tweet, a text, a screenshot, Instagram, whatever, that's not enough. That is not enough. It's your responsibility to fix the problem that has been created and that you have benefited from for the history of this country. So I appreciate where they are now, but We don't got time to wait. So they need to put something on it, take some risk, and use the leverage that they have to enact some real legislative change and some real change in leadership in this country.
Shanae, you play in the WNBA, which has long been one of the most socially active of the professional sports leagues in this country. What is your thought this morning?
Well, seeing all the images of athletes has been tremendously inspiring. And I think the reason why you see athletes leading the charge when it comes to social change is because at the root of it all, it's in our DNA. We are team players. We are wired to care for the last player on the bench as much as we care about ourselves. We've been athletes almost our entire lives. We cannot turn this on or off. This is why you see Jaylen Brown driving 15 hours to lead a peaceful protest in his hometown. This is why you see Maya Moore foregoing WNBA seasons in her prime in order to fight for the wrongfully convicted. This is why you see Karl Anthony Towns, star of the Minnesota Timberwolves, still show strength in the midst of his grief after losing his mom due to the pandemic. That's because I believe as athletes, when we play, we operate in a merit-based world where you are judged by your performance, not your pigmentation. But you see, when we leave the arena, it's not always the same. I always tell people, no matter how much success you have, that success does not guarantee you protection from a society that can, if it so chooses, turn on you based on the color of your skin. So I guess at the root of it all, we as athletes are just simply fighting for the fairness that we have been so fortunate, so lucky to experience while we have been competing. We also, I think, acknowledge our own privilege, because that's not the norm for the majority of people that may look like us, our family, our friends. I guess overall, as athletes, I've been really proud to see them stand up and speak up, because, I mean, we all know this. We're not comfortable staying on the sidelines in the middle of a battle, in the middle of a struggle when it's crunch time. So we want to be in the game. We want to win and, more importantly, share that feeling. That is what moves us. That is our standard, and it's bigger than sports. It applies to all walks of life. A truly level playing field. So I've been really proud to see all the powerful images of athletes using their collective power.
And there's a long and proud history of social activism coming from the world of sports. Nick, you touched on it, and we will have a lengthy look at that a little bit later in this hour. If there's one thing that we've tried to do here over the 2 years now that we've been doing this show is create a little family. You guys are part of that family, and hopefully people who get up in the morning and watch us on television have come to know you and come to care about you. So, Dominique, I would invite you just to take a moment, if you would, and just sort of share whatever is in your heart today. These are times unlike anything I can ever remember. Whatever it is you'd like to say here, I'd like to hear it.
Right. Yeah, I'm not surprised by these things, because it's something that we've grown up with, and I don't want to over-dramatize. Well, I feel like you can't over-dramatize this particular situation. So I think a lot of people are waking up, and I think I'll go back to my first point and put something more specific on it, is that it is incumbent on the white people in the society to address this issue head on. And I think that there are things that people can do, including athletes specifically, is you may want to address your own world first. Understand that the athletes and quarterbacks and team owners cannot fix the systemic issues in this country, but you can address the issues that exist within your society or your small little fiefdom, which is sports. So I think that speaks to addressing the leadership issues with coaches and general managers. That speaks to players being blackballed for speaking out. I think that players can require that other issues be addressed before they come back. And I think teams can require that certain legislation be passed before they be willing to play in particular states or in particular cities. Those are things that people can do. And I think it also goes to us in the media. I think we need to be conscious of the unconscious bias that we bring to this. Like, be aware that none of us are without bias. Be aware that you bring bias to all the stories that you cover, all the players and executives that you talk about, and be aware of that when you are choosing sides in a particular issue, when you are making assumptions about who could be right and wrong in an issue. Be aware of the bias that you bring to it. And most importantly, be aware of the language that you use when you're talking about individuals in this game that you may or may not know. Be aware that that language carries baggage, and it hands that baggage off like a virus to other people who are watching. So people who are watching and hear you describe particular players in a particular way, that impacts the way that they view people who look like them going forward. So I don't want to take the onus off of anybody. anybody necessarily. I want to kind of ratchet it up on everyone. We all are responsible for perpetuating this system and everything that we do and everything that we say. Race is something that we as Black people cannot get away from. Sometimes people want to say, well, this is my safe space. I don't want sports or society or social issues or politics in sports. That's not fair. We don't have the luxury of combing through all that stuff for you. We live in the naps of the racism that is in this country, and you're going to have to also until you fix it.
Shanae?
And I'd have to just join in real quick. You know, I know you mentioned sides, Dom, but there are no sides to this issue. Everyone wants to just label it, quickly dismiss it, probably, if you want to exempt yourself from the conversation by saying that it is a race issue. It's a human issue. It's about how we view and treat one another. That's a universal principle that we should all care about.
Really well, I fully agree with you, but I do think that there are sides. There are either you are looking to address this issue and you are on the right side, or you are not. Whether you are actively fighting against it or you're just passively trying to ignore it, if you are not actively fighting against it, you are on the wrong side.
We will have much more on this as we go. Guys, I thank you.
Yeah, and I think my point being is that we're all human together. Yeah, you're right, Dom.
Got it.
Both of you, thank you, Dominique and Shanae. I'm going to take a break on that thought here. There's sports news to get to this morning. We will get to that, and there will be much more here this morning as well on the sports world's reaction to the death of George Floyd. Coming up at 9 a.m. Eastern time, Stephen A. will join us, and at 9:30 Eastern, I'll be joined by Damora Smith, who is the executive director of the NFL Players Association. That and much more as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by DiGiorno. It's not delivery, it's DiGiorno. Let's get up and go through the news of the sports weekend. The Major League Baseball Players Association yesterday delivered a return to play proposal that includes a 114-game season, deferred salaries in the event that the postseason gets canceled, and an option for all players to opt out due to coronavirus concerns. Buster Olney will join us with why this is so important later in this hour. Meanwhile, hockey, NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly says that league plans to test players daily for COVID-19 if games are able to resume. The NHL estimates they will need 25,000 to 35,000 tests to get through the playoffs. NASCAR continuing their restarted season in Bristol, Tennessee last night. Chase Elliott and Joey Logano collided with three laps to go, and that allowed Brad Keselowski to sneak past and hold on for the win. Elliott and Logano could be seen having a conversation while wearing masks after the race, but it was Keselowski who was celebrating. And then to football we go. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson won the NFL MVP in only his second season last year, earning all 50 first place votes. He was only the second unanimous MVP in NFL history. Tom Brady in 2010 had been the first. But what is the next step for Lamar Jackson? His teammate Mark Ingram has an interesting comparison. This is what he told Good Morning Football. He said, you saw the jump Mahomes had from his second to the third year, the way he was comfortable with his team, the way he's comfortable in himself, being a leader, being a playmaker. I see that same jump for Lamar. Take a look at that a little more closely. Dominique is with us this morning, and Rob Ninkovich jumps in here. And so, Rob, let me start with you. If you're looking at all the quarterbacks in the NFL who are 25 and younger, let's put Mahomes out of the conversation. I think unanimously everybody would take him. Next, who would you take to start a franchise if it wasn't Mahomes amongst that group?
Well, the guy I would pick hasn't even played an NFL football game yet. And me and B-Flo, Brian Flores, are like this. I'm going with Tua. He's the guy that I want to start my franchise with. I feel like he has the upside of a modern NFL, the new, I guess, scheme offensively, how you want to run the RPOs, the threat of running and the ability to throw down the field. I mean, we haven't seen a hefty lefty since Steve Young that can go out there and throw the rock around like he can. So I'm excited. I think he's going to have a great career. And I think in 3 years, give me 3 years, he will be the best quarterback in the AFC.
That's a really strong take, and I like it. Let me ask you this. The concerns and the question marks about him, of course, have all been about his ability to stay healthy, to the point that he wasn't even the first quarterback taken in this draft. How concerned are you about his ability to withstand the pounding of the NFL when he had so much trouble doing it in college?
Well, look, some of those injuries, I understand as a football player, they're freak injuries. You can't help, you know, two guys land on your back and you have a hip injury. Those are things that are hard to avoid. I don't worry about the durability stuff. Look, when you're a quarterback in the NFL and you're smart, you understand I need to take less damage. I need to do things that help my team. So hopefully he doesn't have to run into that bad luck injury bug that he had in college. And if he can stay healthy, I feel like his future is very bright.
All right, Dominique, same question to you. All the quarterbacks in the league whose name is not Patrick Mahomes, 25 and younger, who are you starting with?
Well, I think it's Lamar Jackson, but we're just going to cruise on by the fact that Rob said that Tua is going to be the best quarterback in the AFC in 3 years, which includes Patrick Mahomes. But anyway, Lamar Jackson is the guy I would choose because he has so few question marks compared to everyone else that we're talking about. I think the one thing that you would want Lamar Jackson to get better on, and it's something that Rob brought up on Friday. I thought he did a good job of illustrating how he can make better decisions as far as when he could get hit and when he can avoid getting hit. Making decisions. I think this was the play on the sideline where he could have stepped out and he went back in and took a hit. That wasn't it there, but he does make those type of decisions. If that's all he has to address, then we got a lot to, then he's going to be quite a great quarterback for quite some time. I think the other question marks for so many other people, Tua, I know what we're projecting, but we projected great quarterbacks before who haven't panned out. I think Tua will be good, but saying that he's going to get to MVP level like Lamar Jackson, I think is a little outlandish. And I know people would point out that Lamar Jackson isn't necessarily the best passer, but he's a lot better than people think. If you look at his passer rating in man end zone, he's top five for both. The only other quarterback to do that last year was Drew Brees. So, like, he's throwing the ball well. I understand it's also because he can threaten with the run, but I think he's the guy that you can build around with his unique style, his unique skills, and his ability to read coverages, hang in a pocket, and deliver the ball, and his accuracy's improving. I would love to build around him. I know who you're going to say, though, Greeny.
Well, I would say Sam Darnold, but let's leave him out of this for the moment. I want to focus in on that because, interestingly, the concern for both of the quarterbacks you're talking about, Lamar Jackson and Tua, are about durability. And in the case of Tua, it's because we've seen all the injury. And in the case of Lamar Jackson, it's because he does get hit so much. And historically, that does not bode well for a long career. I believe this is going to be the play that you were talking about, okay, Rob, the other day.
Yeah, he could have made a much
just
better
get out
right there.
Just get out.
Neek, you see it? That's the
and
play that we were talking
about.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, those plays in particular, those plays could affect his process of becoming better in the third year because any in particular play like that when you're getting hit hard could affect your accuracy and throwing the ball down the field. So if he's taking those hits, it's not going to help him progress in his third season.
Go ahead, Dominic, real quick.
That's an easier thing to address. I think Deshaun Watson's the other guy who I think we should mention, and his issues I think are with throwing interceptions, and that's harder to address than it is with Lamar, where it's just like, hey, slide every now and then, step out of bounds. We can address that.
We'll see. Sometimes those things are a little difficult to coach out of players who are accustomed to making so many big plays out of situations like that. Anyway, we'll talk more about it as we go. I want to mention that tonight on ESPN, we continue to look back at the best games on Monday Night Football. Going back to Week 10 last year, the undefeated 49ers hosting Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. It was an overtime thriller, and you'll see it tonight, 7:30 Eastern. It's on ESPN and on the ESPN app. As we continue, NBA and baseball, their return at stake. You'll hear from Woj with the latest. Plus, MLB players give their proposal to owners. Could it save the season? All that and more on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Welcome back to Get Up. The death of George Floyd last Monday in Minneapolis has sparked a wave of anger and protest across our nation. The video of a police officer with his knee on Floyd's neck has now been seen by millions, leaving most of us feeling some combination of angry and frightened and sad. Meanwhile, the reaction from within our world of sports has been extraordinary. It's been passionate. At times, it's even been inspirational. Here's Jeremy Schapp with a look at some of those stories.
In the last week, amid the outrage, sadness, and frustration, with America convulsed in pain and anger, athletes have been speaking up. On Instagram, LeBron James posted these images and wrote, "Do you understand now?" Former NBA guard Steven Jackson, who grew up with George Floyd, spoke in Minneapolis Friday afternoon.
"You can't tell me when that man had his knee on my brother's neck that smirk on his face didn't say I'm protected."
That's right. That's what it is.
Jaylen Brown of the Celtics drove 15 hours to protest in his hometown, Atlanta.
"It's a peaceful protest, bro. Definitely want to, being a celebrity, being an NBA player, don't exclude me from no conversation at all. First and foremost, I'm a black man, and I'm a member of this community. Raising awareness, some of the injustice that we've been seeing is not okay.
Let's start calling these things what they are. These are murderings. These are lynchings."
In recent years, athletes, or at least some athletes, have re-engaged with social justice and civil rights issues, particularly the Black Lives Matter movement. This was LeBron James warming up at the Barclays Center in 2014. In 2016, Colin Kaepernick decided to protest police brutality and institutional racism by not standing in attention for the national anthem.
"There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for."
That decision would cost him his career in football. The message was clear: speak out at your professional peril. But still, there were those who spoke out, mostly black athletes, like Eric Reed and Maya Moore. Chris Long of the Eagles was a notable exception.
"I support my peers, and if you don't see why you need allies for people that are fighting for equality right now, I don't think you'll ever see it."
But this moment, this outrage is generating a different, more widespread response, a response transcending race and defying any reluctance to address issues concerning race.
"I think it's disgusting. I think that there's no explanation for it. I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense. I don't understand how that situation can't be remedied in a way that doesn't end in his death."
Even among athletes like J.J. Watt, who've rarely weighed in on social justice or civil rights issues, the chorus of indignation has been growing. Here was Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz on Twitter: "Can't even fathom what the black community has to endure on a daily basis. Being from North Dakota, I've spent a large part of my life surrounded by people of similar color. So I'm never going to act like I know what the black community goes through, or even has gone through already. I'll never know the feeling of having to worry about my kids going outside because of their skin color." Wentz's teammate, tight end Zach Ertz, and his wife, World Cup champion Julie Johnston Ertz, posted a joint statement on Twitter. They wrote, "I'm sorry for the pain and hurt the African-American community has endured by another human. And more than anything, I'm sorry that you feel that you are alone in this situation." But this time, the message from some prominent white figures in the world of sport is, "You are not alone. We stand with the black community." And Minnesota Timberwolves coach Ryan Saunders is among those speaking out. His message, others should do the same. "Enough is enough," he wrote. "Silence and complacency only add fuel to the fire. We must be better. George Floyd deserved better." Perhaps most notably, Tom Brady, never outspoken on issues beyond football, was moved to express his feelings too. The six-time Super Bowl champion posted an image of George Floyd on Instagram with the hashtag #JusticeForFloyd. These demonstrations of support might be dismissed as insignificant or unrepresentative, or too little too late. But some are saying this is what is needed, this kind of solidarity to affect change.
"We need so many more athletes that don't look like me speaking out about this, having the same amount of outrage, and using that to voice their opinion, to voice their frustration, because that's the only way it's going to change. We've been outraged for hundreds of years.
We know what the problems are, but we don't have a lot of solutions. And maybe sports is part of the solution, because right now we are devoid of leadership. We are devoid of a path. We're devoid of a plan. And that is a very scary, scary thing, speaking from a black man's perspective.
And on Twitter, Dwayne Wade wrote, "Justice will not be served until those unaffected are as outraged as those who are."
As our Jeremy Schapp. Meanwhile, in San Antonio, Spurs guard Lonnie Walker was among the volunteers yesterday helping to clean up damage from the protests. Walker handed out bottles of water and helped to remove graffiti from the sides of buildings. From the NBA, Commissioner Adam Silver sent an internal memo to NBA office employees yesterday, which was obtained by our Mona Shelburne. Part of it read, "Just as we are fighting a pandemic which is impacting communities and people of color more than anyone else, we are being reminded that there are wounds in our country that have never healed. Racism, police brutality, and racial injustice remain part of everyday life in America and cannot be ignored. I am heartened," he wrote, "by the many members of the NBA and WNBA family speaking out to demand justice, urging peaceful protest, and working for meaningful change. As an organization, we need to do everything in our power to make a meaningful difference." And I can bring in our NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski, this morning with some brand new reporting today, as Woj is with us here, about how NBA coaches, Woj, are taking action and using their platform to try to make a difference.
Greeny, the NBA Coaches Association has established essentially a committee that'll start to immediately look at remedies in markets and really try to take on a plan of action to combat a lot of these injustices. You know, names you have seen be very outspoken and really ahead leaders on social issues in the NBA. Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich are among the coaches leading the way on this. But Lloyd Pierce, the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, really took the lead. They had 30 coaches on a call on Saturday, all 30 NBA coaches. And they had another meeting on Sunday. They've got another committee meeting on Tuesday. And they issued a strongly worded denouncement of not only the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, but the continued racial intolerance in this country. And you know, for NBA coaches who have been really among the leaders in this arena, this was another step for that group, you know, to really certainly back the players that they coach in this league and those in their communities.
It's an important time, obviously, and they're involved in that heavily. Meanwhile, Woj, while I have you, it's also an important time regarding the resumption of the NBA season. Why is this week so critical?
Greeny, Thursday, the NBA's Board of Governors, the owners, will vote on a plan to resume the season in Orlando, and they're lining up behind Adam Silver, and you know they're ready to move toward a plan that he, the Players Association, and that they've worked together on. There's a lot of focus right now, Greeny, on a 22-team model of bringing teams back to Orlando in a play-in situation. The league is still digging down on details of what that would look like. And they're going to spend this week finalizing the structure and the format of a return to play. But Thursday will be the day of the vote, and it's expected to overwhelmingly pass.
All right. Well, that to me, that sounds like very good news. Hopefully by the end of this week, we will have basketball to look forward to. Woj, outstanding. Again, exclusive reporting this morning on the NBA coaches. Thank you. Meanwhile, to baseball, where the Players Association yesterday delivered a return-to-play proposal that includes a 114-game season. It includes deferred salaries in the event of a canceled postseason. It includes an option for players to opt out due to coronavirus concerns. It is obviously a far cry from the initial proposal that was made by the owners that met with such unhappiness from the players. And here is our Buster Olney. So let's start there, Buster. What is your reaction to what the players have offered here?
At least the two sides are talking. Look, they're so far apart in so many of these things that they're discussing, and the realities, the calendar upon them. According to the players' plan, They would start the regular season on June 30th. That's only 29 days away. So they have to come up with an agreement. They have to put all the safety protocols in place. If they come up with an agreement, they have to get the players in place for a second spring training. And all long players have told me that they believe that a second spring training would require about 3 weeks. So they have to get moving as quickly as possible.
All right, so this becomes extremely, I hate to ask you to guess, but when they're this far apart and they need to come to a deal, let's call it within the next 7 to 10 days, does that seem reasonable? Does that seem possible?
Yes, it's absolutely possible because, let's face it, to not come up with an agreement this summer, Greeny, the ramifications, the consequences are almost unthinkable for baseball, which if there's no baseball in 2020 would spin into this long cycle of labor strife. The same questions would be still there next spring. They would have to come up with another agreement. Then with the looming end of the CBA in 2021 in December, you know, the possibility of a player strike comes into it. I've heard that from the player's side. And there might be owners who've lost so much money, they feel like, you know what, let's just wait out the players and we'll get the financial model we need. And all the while, they'd be earning the anger, the enmity of sports fans, and who knows what the state of the business would be when it would come back.
Yeah, I was following you on Twitter over the weekend, and you were making that point. Is it going too far to say that the future of baseball as we know it, to a large degree, hangs in the balance over the next 10 days?
No question about it. Because the issues are so large and the impact on the two sides would be so extreme and the anger of fans. All you have to do is every time you see something put out there by either side, a player on social media, follow the mentions and the people reacting. So many fans are angry about how this is developing with so many things going on in our country.
Buster, outstanding. And again, you can read all of that from Buster on ESPN.com and his Twitter page. Buster, thank you. Let me bring Teixeira in here. Mark Teixeira, our former player, who joins us with his perspective on all of this. You just heard Buster talking about what the ramifications could be for this game and this sport that you love so much if it doesn't get worked out in the next week or so. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree with Buster here. I mean, here's the issue, Greeny. Both sides of this debate have really good points. You know, sometimes I look at the owners and go, yeah, you make great points here, you're right. Then I look at the players' argument, and they're right as well. And so when both sides feel like they have, you know, the moral high ground, that's the issue that we do not have more conversations going on right now. And so if both sides stick to their guns, which is their right to stick to their sides, and nobody plays baseball this year, everybody loses. First of all, for the players, you look at what the future contracts are going to look like if baseball isn't played. Salary arbitration, free agency is going to completely dry up. Now you look at the owner's side. Their franchise values are going to plummet. So it behooves both sides of this debate to come together and actually play.
We understand how the players have historically stuck together so strongly, and that's why they've been historically by far the most powerful of the sports unions. Take us inside that a little bit. What kinds of conversations, from your experience as a longtime player, what kinds of conversations are taking place amongst players right now?
Well, you know, players, they do want to play. That's the issue. And they're not getting their salary. They're in the prime of their careers. They're not playing. So they want to play. But at the same time, they respect the past. So you have the older players talking about, look at the guys in 94, 95 that held out for your rights and your freedoms. They respect those past players. But they also have to look at the future of the game and try to put it in the best situation. So they're weighing this very delicate balance by, you know, respecting what has occurred in the past labor negotiations, but also not wanting to completely torpedo the future of baseball.
And so for the people you're talking to and your experience in all of this, how would you describe your level of optimism that they will figure this thing out in the next week to 10 days?
I mean, I said it from all along, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I do want to warn the players very, very quickly. If you win the negotiation this year, let's just say that the owners accept this deal, which I don't think they will, but if they accepted this deal, the economic catastrophe that would happen to the owners is real. And so every dollar that the players make this year, they're not making next year and the year after. So if owners continue to hemorrhage cash and lose a bunch of money in 2020 because of this pandemic, they're not going to be spending it next offseason and in future offseasons. So I worry that's a little bit of a Pyrrhic victory if the players actually do win this negotiation.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. This is a critical moment in that sports history. Tex, great to see you. Thank you, my man. Stay safe. Meanwhile, tomorrow morning we have more Korean baseball for you here on ESPN. The Lotte Giants take on the Kia Tigers. That's tomorrow, 5:25 a.m. on ESPN and the ESPN app. We will follow immediately with Get Up right here on ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
We're back on Get Up, and the biggest name in college football coaching is Nick Saban of Alabama. He put out a statement over the weekend that reads, in part, "We are at an important moment for our country, and now is the time for us to choose kindness, tolerance, understanding, empathy, and most importantly, it's time to love each other. Every life is precious, and we must understand we have so many more things that unite us than divide us." Meanwhile, the men's basketball coach at North Carolina Central is Lavelle Moton. He believes that Power 5 coaches aren't doing enough in this moment.
We have coaches in Power 5, football and basketball coaches. The reality is a lot of these coaches have been able to create generational wealth. I mean, their grandkids' kids are going to be able to live a prosperous life because athletes who were the complexion of George Floyd was able to run a football, throw a football, shoot a basketball, or whatever have you. So they have benefited greatly from athletes that look like George Floyd and many more. But whenever people, the complexion of George Floyd, is killed, assassinated, murdered in the street in broad daylight, they're silent. And I have a problem with that because it seems as if black lives matter to them whenever they can benefit from it, right? Whenever they're getting them a first down or, you know, catching an alley-oop or shooting a three or whatever. But when it's time for the humanity to speak up on behalf of those student-athletes, it's silence, it's cricket. And so my problem is if the murdering of black Americans it's too risky of an issue for you to stand up as a leader, then who are they really playing for?
Those are the words of Lavelle Moton. We are joined now. Nick is with us. Laura Rutledge, Paul Feinbaum here this morning, guys. Thank you. And Laura, you talk to so many people around college football in particular every day. What are you hearing from college coaches right now?
Yeah, Greeny, a lot of them, as they've watched a lot of these events unfold, immediately thought, I need to get in touch with my players. I need to get in touch with my players' parents. And you even saw a statement released by Minnesota head coach PJ Fleck in talking about that. But that's been the sentiment of many of them. And so many conversations, many video chats, many conferences with the parents that I think that's been one of the most important things over the past few days is these coaches going to the parents saying, how can I help your son? How can I help your son in a day and age when this is what we're dealing with? And a lot of the parents of these young black men had some really strong words for these coaches about how they can come out, not only just with statements, but how they can enact change further beyond that. And I think that's really what we're seeing right now, this shift in college football that is beyond complacency and really focused on how they can help these young black men on their teams.
Paul Feinbaum, I'd be very interested to hear your perspective. What do you believe is the obligation of a college football coach, for example, during this time?
I think what Nick Saban did the other day, Greeny, is the obligation of every single head football coach in this country. And quite frankly, I haven't heard very much. I think college football coaches have been derelict in their responsibility by being quiet. I certainly understand what Laura said, and talking to parents through Zoom or however is one thing. But getting out in front of it and making a strong statement is another. And that's what Saban did, and others have done that as well. I don't want to paint. Well, I am painting a broad brush because, quite frankly, I haven't heard very much. But and there are good coaches out there who have done this. But every single football coach in this country needs to get out in front, or otherwise they are going to lose the people that they depend on the most, their players.
Dominique, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think losing the people that they depend on the most is one way that that they could feel some pain, but it's also like address the systemic societal issues. And while I guess Nick Saban looks like looks good in comparison to the other coaches who've done nothing, like I listened and I read to what he said, and he said nothing again. Like it's a safe quote. Like there's no coach in the country that I would I imagine would be uncomfortable with that going out and then put their neck on the line. And it goes back to what I said in the very first segment of the show is you got to put something on it. If you want me to believe it, if you want me to believe that you actually care, if you want me to believe that you are actually trying to push for change, and it doesn't have to be like risk your job like Colin Kaepernick necessarily. But I mean, even if it's your public about the books that you're reading and you are holding Instagram lives regularly after you finish a chapter to discuss what you've learned and how things are different. Like that's helpful. What Nick Saban said was, we love everybody. We all love each other. Let's take care of it. It's the same as what you see on social media where people cherry pick Dr. King quotes and it makes them feel better about themselves. That's not going to help anything. That's not going to fix anything. So thanks, Nick, for putting that out. I mean, compared to the other coaches who have done nothing, but also like that is table stakes at this point. That is the bare minimum. So I expect more from them. And I thought what Lavelle Moten said was quite poignant and right on.
Laura, going back to what you mentioned about the players at this time and what may be going through their minds, because this is an